Welcome to everyone. Why don't we go ahead and get started? My name is Scott Hillier. This is my contact information up there. Feel free to send me an email after the session if you have some follow-up questions on anything we're doing here. And for the next hour and 15 minutes, we're going to be talking about creating search-based solutions inside of SharePoint 2010. Here's our agenda. We'll be talking about exactly what are search-based solutions, gives ourselves a little bit of a definition to work with. We're going to go over the search architecture in SharePoint 2010, make sure we understand all the moving parts. Talk specifically about customizations that we can do inside of SharePoint that lend themselves towards this idea of creating solutions around search, specifically custom ranking models, customizing the search center, its UI, its results that come back, keyword query syntax, SQL full-text query, and then we'll touch on just a little bit at the end, .NET assembly connectors and how to write those yourself. But let's start with the idea behind a search-based solution. So a couple of things to sort of orient us. My perspective on search in SharePoint is that it is a sorely underutilized utility for us as solution developers. Let me give you an example. If you think about using SharePoint, it's very common when SharePoint gets rolled out, especially for people that have never seen it before, and they start to understand collaboration, and they say, gee, I can see that someone can assign me a task anywhere inside of SharePoint. There can be dozens, hundreds, even thousands of task lists, and how do I find tasks that I'm supposed to do? So one of the things that we quite often do is we have to create aggregation solutions. So go out everywhere, find people's tasks, bring them back, present them in a nice list in one place, on your My Site, something like that. And people will write code that runs camel queries to do it. They'll write code that loops through objects to do it, whatever it is that they're doing. Nobody ever writes code to just run a search and do that. So we've got a lot of that information right in front of us. Why not just write some code to run some search, bring back that information? So we don't really tend to think of the search engine as a component of the solutions that we create. We tend, as developers, I think, to think about how am I going to write some code to go get that information? And the fact is, it's right in front of you. And so with that sort of as a starting point, when I think of this idea of search-based applications, what is a search-based application? Well, a search-based application is creating a solution that brings back results from search in such a way that you can operate on them when you look at the results. So traditional search results, right, if we go back in time, they bring back just links to things. So we get a bunch of links, I can click on them and go look at that, right? But increasingly, even in simple things like this example right here we have on the slide, we can see that we're doing an image search here. All of us have done an image search on the web. And when you do image searches or multimedia searches, what comes back to you is the actual item itself. So in this case, we're getting multimedia presentations returned to us in the search results. Furthermore, I can operate directly on the search results, which simply means I can view the video in the search results. Now, we're starting to see this more and more, and people are sort of taking this for granted, but I'm not seeing a lot of the development that we do in SharePoint is following that same idea. Instead, what we're doing is using search to return a bunch of links and then forcing our users to click the link and see if that's the document they want. So I want to convince you that you should start to think about how you create solutions in SharePoint that do this exact thing, bring things back in the way that people can operate on it. So what we're going to do over the time that we have together here is I'm going to show you the moving pieces that you can use as developers to begin to create these solutions. This slide shows us the various search offerings from Microsoft, and this is important because when you're talking about search-based solutions, and certainly when we're talking about what customizations we can perform on our search engine, it's important to know what search engine we're talking about. Are we talking about SharePoint Foundation 2010 search, the search engine that just comes with Foundation? Well, maybe not, probably not for these types of solutions. You know, it works on a single site collection. We can't crawl external sources. It's good for team-based stuff, not much more. Search Server Express gets us farther, able to crawl external sources, but it's really not until we get to the Search Server 2010 that we have something that's a true enterprise search engine where these types of solutions become more possible. And in fact, where we really are in this discussion is probably in the SharePoint Server 2010 space, where I have a true enterprise search engine, and everything I do in this session can be done inside of SharePoint Server 2010. Of course, we have the fast search engine, highly scalable, true enterprise, you know, made for running searches against thousands and thousands of items, bringing them back very quickly. All the things I'll show you today will also work in fast, but I suspect that most people will be using SharePoint Server 2010 for their solutions, and so that's where I am in the demos that you'll see today, using SharePoint Server 2010. Before we get into the actual customizations, let's talk a little bit about the search architecture here, just so we all have a common vocabulary and everybody understands the pieces that we're manipulating. I'm going to begin over here in the upper left-hand corner where you see the content sources. So the content sources, those are the things that we want to search, that we're going to index. And in order to access the content sources, in order for the indexing engine down here in the lower right-hand corner to be able to actually index content, there are two key components that allow access to the system for crawling and then allow the actual crawling to occur. And those are the iFilters and .NET Assembly connectors. So the iFilters and .NET Assembly connectors, what they're doing is allowing, again, access to the system. So how do I get into a file system to look at the documents? And then the iFilters to actually look at the document itself. So an iFilter for a PDF, an iFilter for office documents or what have you. So the index engine needs those specifically set up for looking at that particular content. Now, one of the big things that you'll notice is a change here I want to point out to you is that in the search architecture now in SharePoint 2010, it is the .NET Assembly connector that is the primary component used by the indexing engine to access a system that it wants to crawl. This is a change from the way things have been done previously, but the great news for us is that we can write .NET Assembly connectors. So a .NET Assembly connector is something I can create in Visual Studio 2010, which means that as a big part of my search-based solutions, I can really target any content. This is a very important concept. So any system that you have that has some kind of object model or application programming interface or can be wrapped in a web service or anything like that, I can write a .NET Assembly connector to talk to that, which really means we can crawl just about anything. When the index engine runs, the output of that goes into the search service application. The search service application is one of the many service applications available in SharePoint. We should all know at this point that the monolithic shared service provider is gone, and instead now we have an a la carte service model with various services inside of SharePoint, and search is just another one of the many services that are available inside of SharePoint. So the search service application, or SSA, is really the heart of it, and what happens is it's made up of a couple of pieces here. So the indexing engine is providing its output, and what we're doing is building up an indexing file, which you see over here on the right. So as we crawl, we build up an indexing file that can be searched, but there are other pieces to it as well. So you'll see the federated search connectors at the top. So our search solutions can do federated search, which means that we take the query that's given to us, and not only we return the results from our engine, but we can send that query off to other engines like Bing, for example, get results back and show them in the same result set. So that's federation. We also have the search service database, working our way from left to right here, which is the database used by the search service application. Key to us in our solutions here are the managed properties database. Managed properties we can define inside the search service application, and a managed property is used to expose one or more crawled properties to our solution. So what that means is if you look over at the content sources, when I'm crawling different content sources, perhaps those content sources all have a concept of a title metadata field, but they call them different things, OWS underscore title, you know, maybe title with some suffix on it, whatever it is that your external system might refer to title as. But in the end, to a human being, those are all title. So a managed property would allow us to define something called title and say this property means all of these crawled properties. So that's a critical concept for us because we're going to use managed properties in our solutions to expose information to people in the search results. Once we have our search results built up through crawling, then the search engine can use the index file and the managed properties database. It uses both the index file and the managed properties database to execute queries and return results, which we know that we see through the search center. So the search center is just sending these queries off to the search engine, index file, managed properties database, results come back. So pretty straightforward there. But it is this architecture that we intend to manipulate in our solution so that we're not just giving people pages of links to go to. The first place we're going to start now in things that we can affect about the search engine that will help us create search-based solutions is relevancy. So relevancy is a concept that says, you know, when I run this search, what is the results appear in what order, right? So typically what happens is that when end users run search, and I hear this all the time when I'm doing consulting, is people say, oh, we don't like SharePoint search. So why don't you like SharePoint search? It doesn't work right. Well, why doesn't it work right? Because the executive puts in a keyword, and the document that she's thinking of isn't the first one. Well, there's all kinds of reasons that could be true, right? So first of all, how's the metadata look on that document, right? Those types of things. But the order in which they appear is what we refer to as the relevancy. So what is it that is driving that? And there's two concepts underneath that are very important here when we're talking about relevancy, which is ranking versus sorting. So when we're discussing relevancy, making the results that you want appear closer to the top of the search results, please don't get that confused with a hard sort. So if you're interested in seeing your task list sorted by due date, that's not ranking, that's sorting. Are you with me on that? Ranking or relevancy is like it's like a little spice in the meal. We're not going to guarantee that these things are sorted in a certain order, but we're nudging them to be sorted in a certain order. So a classic example of that might be if people are searching for documents about SharePoint to help end users, learn how to do things in SharePoint, but when they search, those documents are not at the top. Well, if we nudge the relevancy to like the word SharePoint a little bit more, we can push those documents up to the top. We still can't guarantee a particular document will appear at the top, but we can sort of nudge them in that direction. The classic way to affect relevancy is to use authoritative pages. Authoritative pages are available to you in the search service application, and you can go into the search service application and you can designate certain pages inside of SharePoint in levels of particular authoritative levels. So if it's a most authoritative page, then what happens is your click distance from that authoritative page has impact on where you're sorted. So one simple way to greatly improve the results that come back to people is to designate authoritative pages. Most organizations aren't doing that. And then the click distance, as I said, away from that authoritative page will help push those documents to the top. So if there's a particularly important site that the executives use, then make that an authoritative site, and the documents that appear there will begin to bubble closer to the top. There are times, however, when authoritative pages are not giving us enough of what we want, so we want to go further, and in 2010, what we can do is create now a custom ranking model. So in 2007, we really didn't have anything other than the authoritative pages to nudge the results in the direction we wanted them to go. But now we can have custom ranking models, and we can actually say which elements of the search should have an effect and how much effect they should have. When we create these custom ranking models, the custom ranking models have both query-independent elements and query-dependent elements. Now, this is an important concept. Basically, what it says is that the query-independent elements are multipliers on the relevancy that should be applied regardless of the query that's run. So it doesn't have anything to do with the keyword that they type into search. You want them nudged anyway. So an example of this could be any file that ends with a docx extension, bump it, make it go higher to the top. So no matter what they search for, we're going to push Word documents to the top of the search. That's a query independent element. And then there are query dependent elements, which means I want this affected by what they type into the keyword query box. So for example, the body of the document is query dependent because your hits inside the body are affected by the keywords that somebody provides. So that'll push up based on whether or not they're getting hits inside the body of the document. In order to create these custom ranking models, we need to worry about creating managed properties. I mentioned those a little bit earlier. We can do weights and normalizations across these. This is how you nudge the results up. You can say this particular element is worth more when you compute the rank. And then what we do after we create it and set it up, we're going to install it inside of SharePoint. And we have to do an update to the core results web part, which is the web part that actually shows the search results, in order to get our custom ranking model to work. Okay, so why don't we take a look at that? So we're going to jump into this VM here, and I'm just going to start out on this search center right here. And we've got several different customizations going on here. We'll use various ones as we go along. So I just want to point out we've got all these different tabs that we can look at. But we're going to start by going to the home page here. And what we'll do is I just want to show you a document library that we have that we're going to do some searching against to start with. So this first sample I'm going to show you is a custom ranking model. And my idea for this custom ranking model is that we're interested in pushing documents that have a higher star rating to the top of the search results. So here you see I have just a regular document library with a rating column, 0 through 5, on it. And it seems to make sense that we would like, when people search, if documents are rated higher, maybe those should get pushed up to the top. So that's our idea. And let's see what we would have to do to make that happen. Well, when you create a document library that has this rating column inside of it, then what happens is after this feature is enabled, there will be a new crawled property in the search service application for average rating. So as people do star ratings, there's an average that's computed for the document, and that becomes a property that gets crawled during search. So once this is enabled, you can do a full crawl again, and you'll find out that it's available to you. So if we come into Central Administration, Manage Service Applications, come down to the Search Service Application, and inside of here go to our Managed Properties, you'll see that I have an average rating property here. And notice on the right over here, this maps to OWS underscore average rating. So we're creating this new metadata property. On the right is the name of the crawled property. So this is the one that will appear once you've enabled the ability to do star ratings inside of SharePoint. You do a full crawl on that, and that information is available. You'll create a new managed property. Again, this new managed property allows us to create a property that we can work with in our solutions that maps to crawled properties. In this case, we have a one-to-one relationship here. We have this average rating, which is a property I created, and it's simply mapping one-to-one to the crawled property called OWS underscore average rating. So we need to be able to set that up as well. Okay, once I have that in place, my idea is to be able to use this average rating to help our search results come to the top. But I'm not allowed to use a metadata property to influence search results in a custom ranking model unless I explicitly enable the property for that purpose using PowerShell. So what we would have to do, come into my rating search solution here, look inside PowerShell, and we'll just go ahead and open up a little PowerShell here. And you can see, very simple, What I'm doing is the first line of code is getting a connection to the search service application. And then the property average rating. So the dollar sign P is pointing to the average rating managed property that I just created. And then there's a property for it called enabled for query independent rank. I set it to true and I update it. And that's going to allow me to use it in my custom ranking model. So you have to define the managed property you want and explicitly enable it for use in a ranking model. Once you've got that set up, then what you can do is create a ranking model. So a ranking model is nothing more than an XML file and here's an example of one. So this ranking model begins with the element ranking model, and inside you can see there are query dependent features and query independent features. And the ID for this is a GUID, so my ranking model is ID'd by the GUID here. And if we take a look at what's inside of here, in my query independent features, you can see that I reference the body of the document. And then what I can do is provide it a weight. So I've given it a weight of 0. So I've basically said, I don't care about what you type in for the body of the document. And then in my query independent features, you can see that I've referenced my average rating, and then I've given these weights to whether it's 5 stars, 4 stars, 3. You can see how this works, right? Okay. Now let's stop for just a second and talk about what we've done here. This is a demonstration. So what I've done is I've purposely just put in really big numbers or really small numbers so this will work in front of you and you can see what's going on. But this really violates the spirit of what you would use a ranking model for. This is much more like a hard sort. I'm forcing these numbers so much that we're trying to push 5-star items all the way to the top of the results. And I'm basically saying, I don't care what you typed in for the query. If it's 5 stars, I want that thing pushed all the way to the top. So this is not a great example of what you would do in production. Remember, you know, a ranking model is really more seasoning inside the meal as opposed to a hard sort. But it's effective for understanding what's happening here because it's guaranteed to show you something every time we run it. But the bottom line is that you would use the ranking model XML to specify query independent and query dependent properties, and then you can change the weights. Now, the reality is that you can put whatever you want in here. So there's no range on the weights. Everything is relative. And the other key thing to understand about this is please notice these attributes that are PID. PID. PID is the property ID for the managed property that you care about. Yes, I have used the name here. You can see the name is average rating, but the name actually has no real impact. It's primarily for your readability of this model. You're interested in the PIDs, and you can grab the PIDs for any managed property using PowerShell and then update your model as such. Okay, so once I've got the model in place here now, what I want to do is add the model to SharePoint, and we can do that with some PowerShell as well. Let's take a look at how that will happen. Okay, so here, this first part is just to enable for query independent rank. We saw that already. We're really interested in what comes after that. So we're getting the search service application, and let me break this out so you can see it more. We're really interested in this center section right here. Okay. And you can see that what I do is I say new SP enterprise search ranking model. And then the argument being passed in is ranking model XML. And this is going to scroll a lot to the right, but if you'll look at the argument here, Basically, what this is the XML model I just showed you all on one line. So it expects me to pass in the whole model like this, but this simple command will add the new ranking model into SharePoint. And now what you can do is we can see the ranking models that are available. We'd be able to list those out here. And here's the code for listing the ranking models right here. Just list out the ranking models. But basically what you see when you add them is that the ranking models go into SharePoint, and the important thing to you is the GUID that is their ID. So SharePoint has a bunch of ranking models already in it. And you can use any of them by ID. So once we've created this ranking model, the next thing that we need to do is we simply need to tell SharePoint, hey, we'd like to be able to use that. So the way that this thing gets used once you have it is you have to go to the web parts on the search page. Let's go back to our search here. So if we come to search results, and let's just go to our rating solution right here. If we come to the search results, we could type something in here, and we'll see it in action. And I could say average rating greater than 3. Run a search on that. And then you can see I got a few documents back. You can see clearly the average rating is greater than 3 on these documents. I have 4s and 5s coming back. And you can see that they're basically sorted with the highest rated documents appearing at the top in this simple set that we have right here. So this is our model in action, but in order to get this model that we've now created and installed in SharePoint to function, what we have to do is replace some of the web parts on the page. So we can come in here, edit this page. And the web part that we care about is this one called the core search core results web part. The search core results web part in 2010 has a property called the default ranking model ID. If the default ranking model ID of this web part is not set, then it uses the default ranking model in SharePoint. So if you don't do anything, it just uses the one the team made up, which is designated as the default. All of the ranking models in SharePoint have IDs, GUIDs for their IDs, and they can also be designated as the default. One is designated as the default. And in fact, if you were to run a little PowerShell that I showed you and list out all the ranking models, you would see that SharePoint has about 6 or 7 ranking models out of the box. One of them is the default one that runs for normal searches, and the other 5 or so are all about people search. So it's various relevancies for finding people in the organization. But once we create our own, then we can go ahead and just replace the web part here and tell it to use our ranking model. Now, interestingly, the web part itself, if I were to put it in edit mode right now and edit the properties for the web part, the web part itself does not have a default ranking model ID exposed in the interface in the browser. So you can't just come in here and set it. That would be nice, but you can't do that. So instead, what you have to do is export the default web part, and then you're going to come in and edit that by hand. So I've got that in here. And not you. And so you can see I've exported it as a .webpart file. And then if we go ahead and open it up with Notepad, and we look for the property default ranking model, here's the default ranking model ID property. And so what I did was I exported the .webpart file, and then I came in here and I found this property, and I changed its value from an empty string to the GUID that is the model that I just used PowerShell to install. And so now, whenever search results are run on this particular page that has this particular search core results web part on it, then my custom ranking model will be applied to those results. So this is kind of nice, because what it means, if we sit back from the technical details for a second and just think about what that means, what it means is that we can create search-based solutions that have ranking models that are particular to our solution. So we're not talking about something where we change the ranking model and all of a sudden we goof up the whole farm and everybody's just getting Word docs, right? We're not talking about that. But if we're building a particular solution designed to deliver training documents to somebody and we want to nudge certain ones to the top, we can do that, replace the search core results web part on our search results page, and that's the ranking model that's going to get used. You'll also notice, let's keep this in place for a second, you'll also notice that my search results appear as you would expect them to appear. That is, they have the star ratings next to them. So we can see that I have a rating column with stars. That's kind of nice, and not something that we're going to get out of the box. I've clearly changed the way the results appear. And the way that I've done that is I've simply used XSLT to do that. So the other nice thing that you'll want to do with your search core results web part is while you're in here, you'll want to change the XSLT that's used to render the results. And although my text is very big here, you can see that this is the XSLT that's going to get applied. And if we scroll down here just a little bit, let's do a quick search. I'll find what I want to show you. Just do star if like that. And let's do find next. Okay. You can see right here that basically this is the XSLT that's driving those images to appear. So we're just taking the value of the average rating column and then showing 0 through 5 stars based on whatever that is, and that makes sense. So there's two things you can do right away to create a search-based solution that provides people more meaningful results and gives them something that makes sense to them in the search results right away. As long as we're here doing this, I do want to point one thing out to you. Notice this query that I ran here where I say A star average rating greater than 3, and it kind of sorts it here, and that's nice. Well, what I'm going to do now is I'm going to take away the A star part, and let's just go average rating greater than 0. We'll just say that and run it, and then you have some very interesting behavior here. Well, the good part of this is average rating greater than 0. Clearly, all these documents have an average rating greater than 0, but they're no longer sorted, are they? So my custom ranking model actually wasn't applied in this case. And the reason it wasn't implied is because my query that I'm running here right now is reliant only on a managed property. See, I gave a managed property name and a value. So when the search engine has a query that is constituted only by a managed property and no text value to search against, it will simply use the value from the managed property database and return results, and never engages the relevancy ranking model, because it basically has a hard value it can look for, and it makes the search much more efficient to skip that ranking. But once you put in some kind of text that it needs to look for, like that, then it's going to engage the ranking model because it actually has to go to the indexing values now and not just the managed database. So that's an interesting bit of behavior. Frustrated me for a long time when I was first learning how to do this, because I knew I had everything right, but I wasn't getting the ranking. So I'll save you a little bit of trouble by pointing that out. Okay, so that's the first thing. Let's jump back to the slides now. All right, so we talked a little bit about the search web parts. Customizing search web parts is certainly one of the big things that you can do to improve the way that search results appear to people and how they can operate on them inside of search. So by far, the most important one is the core results web part, but these are all the ones that are available on the page. And the good news is that we can now, in 2010, we can now get into the search pipeline both before the query is run and after the results are returned. So we're often going to get involved with these web parts or XSLT in order to affect the way the query is run before it's executed or the way the results are displayed after they're executed. So customizing Search Center is another big thing that we'll do. This, the first two, custom to create custom tabs inside the Search Center, and the customizing of the results using XSLT, those things are largely the same as they were inside of 2007. Modifying the query pipeline, on the other hand, is something new for us in 2010. So we can still create tabs, we can still use the XSLT, but now we have this ability to get into the query pipeline, as I said, before or after the query is run. All right, so let's take a look at a demo for that. I just want to talk a little bit about the actual customization process for the Search Center. So here inside my Search Center site, if I come down here and we say view all the site content, you'll notice that I have a couple of different lists here, tabs in the search pages and tabs in the search results. So the tabs that you see in the Search Center, you hit a tab like we just did to search for ratings, and you type something in, and then of course you get results and you still see the tabs. It's easy to think that there's only a single set of tabs, but if you pay very close attention to the pages up in the URL, you'll notice that there's actually a different page for the search query than there is for the search results. And there are, in fact, two sets of tabs in any Search Center. One of those sets of tabs appears when you initiate the search. The other set appears along with the search results. And so if you are interested in creating a tab for your search-based solution, what you would do is come in and create a tab for both the search page and the search results page. So typically what you'll do is come in and just create one here. You can see I have a ratings tab created. And in the other list, you will also create the same thing using the same name. There's a ratings tab. But what happens if you edit it, you can see that they are tied to different pages. So one tab is tied to a search page where you initiate the search, and another tab is tied to a search results page, in this case, a page I've called ratingresults.aspx. Once you have your tabs in place, then what you can do is go to the pages library and create new pages. And you'll see that when you go to create a new page, you have search and search results templates that you can use. So to give yourself a place for your new search-based application, you would create two tabs, one for the search, one for the search results, and then you would associate with them a search page and a search results page. You then have to do some modification to the search web part to say, please use the search results page that I just made. And then basically what you'll have is the same look and feel that I've got here, where you go to the search site and you can see tabs running across the top. And then after the results, you'll see those same tabs there as well. So with that in mind, I'm going to show you another example of a search-based solution here, something else that we can do. This one being getting ourselves inside of the query pipeline, in this case, before the query is run. So when we use XSLT, we're manipulating the results after the query is run, in our case to show something like stars. But now let's take a look at this solution here, which is a My Assignments solution. So let me describe to you what this is doing. What this solution does is it allows you to do a keyword search. So I could come in here and say, I'm looking for things that have the keyword approve in them. But what it does is it only returns to you items in SharePoint that have an assigned to field with the current user in it. You with me on that? So I'm able to put in a keyword I care about approve, but it will only return to me things where I've been assigned to do something. That's pretty handy. So you can see that I've been assigned to approve something right here, and I can act on it directly from the search results. I can click on it here in the search results. Hard drive's running here for a second. and then I can come in here and approve it. And I'll scroll down a little bit. Now, there we go. So this is a workflow item here that's left over from the approve. But I want to stop and make a point here about this. Let's just stop and think about what we've just done. Let's go back to that beginning thing I said where, hey, you know, one of the common things that people ask us is they say, I've got items all over SharePoint where I've been assigned things. How can I find them and act on them? And our reaction as developers is to say, I'm going to run a camel query or I'm going to loop through a bunch of things or whatever it is that we're doing. But with a simple search solution, you could create a place where anyone in the organization can go to manage all the tasks they have in SharePoint by just making sure the results are always returned to assign based on the assigned to field being the current user. And then when those results come back, they can act on them right there. So there's this whole idea, right, that I'm trying to paint for you, which is, consider all the navigation that you have in SharePoint. This site is under this site is under this site. There is a whole design of this type of portal that says, I don't care about any of that navigation. All I want to do is go to a search page and find what I'm looking for and have those results be highly personalized for me. And my entire interface for interacting with SharePoint is a series of search pages that return tasks, documents, due dates, whatever the heck it is that I care about. It just makes SharePoint mine. You see how that might work? So this is a place that I just think we're not doing enough work, and we have all these tools in front of us that could really make life easier for people. Now, let me show you how easy this was to do. Basically, to make this solution, what I did was I wrote a custom web part. And one of the things that we can do in 2010 now is we can inherit from the core search results web part. And I did exactly that. I made myself a web part. Here's the web part, the assigned to me results web part. I dropped this thing down. It is just a regular old web part that you already know how to create. It is ridiculously simple. It inherits from the core results web part. So this is the key thing that we can do in 2010 that we could not do in 2007. We can now inherit from the core results web part. And then what we'll do is we'll override the get XPath navigator method. And the whole reason we're overriding that is to get our hands on this query manager object. The query manager object allows you to insert yourself in the query pipeline before the search is run. So somebody has typed in a search they want to run, you can grab it, look at it, manipulate it, and then send it on down the pipeline. You can see how simple the solution is right here. In the second part, where all I do is append to your query the assigned to managed property. And then I put in either your login name or your name. I'm looking for both. And so you're not going to get anything back in this search result that doesn't have a field where you've been assigned that item. Very, very simple to do. So now what we'll do is deploy this web part, and then I'm going to go to that search results page, and I'm going to delete the out-of-the-box core results web part, and I'm just going to drop mine right in it. And because mine inherits from the out-of-the-box one, it's going to work perfectly, but it's going to affect every single query run there. And the other key thing to take away, if I haven't made it clear enough, is that I'm only affecting the queries that are run on my tab, right, in my little space where my little application runs, and I'm not affecting any of the other search that's going on. So I've got this thing sandboxed in to a little place where it's just my application. But again, I hope that's given you some good vision about things you can do that would really make end users' lives easier. And these are types of things we get asked to do all the time. Okay. Let's bounce out of that. Back to the slides here. Okay, next on our list of things to talk about is keyword query syntax and SQL syntax. So we've seen how easy it is to jump inside of the pipeline. But two other things that we can do is we can write our own custom web parts that use keyword query syntax or SQL full text syntax. So the keyword query syntax, we see some examples up here. Keyword query syntax is simply typing text into that search box. Some of the things that we can do, we've seen some of them already, but we can take a managed property, any managed property that we have, in this case like last name or average rating, and we can provide a value. So last name A, that's going to return everybody in the organization whose name starts with A. Average rating greater than zero, we saw that in action already. We can write things like training plus is document one. Is document one is a very powerful little tip that every end user should know. It basically says, I only want you to return things in the results that are actually documents. So people are often looking for documents. They can help themselves out a tremendous amount by just simply filtering out all the other noise. And then you can see an example where we're putting this sort of together. So I'm looking for the keyword training, plus author is Scott Hillier. So only give me documents authored by Scott that have to do with training. You get the idea. We can also do Boolean type stuff, so the words client and server inside of the syntax. So the keyword query syntax in 2010 just gets more and more powerful, things we can do without ever having to break down and write a complete query. But if we need to, we can still go to SQL full text syntax. And you can see that at the bottom there, where we're using something that looks much more like a regular query. Select the URL and title from scope, where scope is all sites. And is document one. So what's this query doing down here at the bottom? This is returning to us documents that were added to the portal in the last 7 days. Well, there's a pretty interesting thing that people like to know about, right? That's a question you get all the time. What's new in the portal? Well, there's the query that tells you what's new inside the portal. All right, let's go take a look at those. So one of the things I want to make clear, if it's not already, is that users really should know all about the SQL keyword query syntax. So oftentimes, you know, when we roll out SharePoint, oftentimes we don't give end users enough training before we put SharePoint out there. And it's difficult or impossible for end users to really discover keyword query syntax. And yet, I would argue if everyone in our organization knew keyword query syntax, they would bother us a lot less about how bad SharePoint search is, right? Because you can simply come in here and say, you know, I'm interested in documents about SharePoint, and by the way, I would like them to just be documents. Right? So again, my point here is this is a type of query that any end user can type. You don't have to be a techie to do it. You just have to understand a little bit about how the thing works. I have no idea what search results are going to come back here. I think we'll probably get a couple of things. But you get my point. So because we have Boolean support and wildcard support and metadata property support, it's well worth our time to simply teach this to make sure our end users know it or at least have a good reference for it so that they can get better results on their own. Okay, but there are often times where we want to use this in our own solutions programmatically, and we can do that as well. I'm going to show you a couple of examples of doing that type of thing. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to show you how I've used keyword query syntax to create a very simple employee directory. One of the things that another request that we get often from end users is they like the people search. The people search is fine, but what we'd really like to do is have that good old employee directory where you have like first name, last name, and everybody, you know, I could go look at the H's and see everybody in the company who's H, that type of thing. So I've created a simple example of that here. We'll just click on the employee directory solution. And you can see that I've just got A through Z up here. And then when I come up here and click, click C, It brings back everybody in the organization whose name starts with C. You know, here's H, right? And what this is doing is this is actually running a people search in the background. So we could go, right? We could go to the regular search. And again, look how simple this is if our end users knew how to do this. I can do this, and I'm making my own little personal employee directory. Now, we probably should have done it against the people site, but. There we go. You can see I'm making my own little people directory, so anybody could do this. But sometimes they want to see those results in a very particular sort of employee directory format. And then here we are doing that in code for them, but I'm still running a search in the background. The neat thing about this solution is if you click on somebody like Brian, just like in the people results, if you click on them in the people results, it takes you to the same place, the public view of their My Site, which is exactly what you would expect. This type of thing is very easy to do in SharePoint. We would do it by making, again, a web part. So here's a web part I made to create this. Let's go ahead and take a look at the code. Very straightforward stuff. You can see it's just a regular web part. And I've taken the sledgehammer approach here, nothing fancy. I have a bunch of link buttons, A through Z. You can see that. And here's the create child controls, which simply generates a link button, A through Z. Right? Simple, simple stuff. And then when you click on one, all it does is creates a keyword query. So any valid keyword query we could create here, we're just doing the exact same thing that we did in the search results center, the search center rather, ourselves just before. And we'll scroll down a little bit more. And the interesting part is down here in the render contents. Here inside the render contents, we're going to execute that query programmatically and then display the results. In order to do that, the first thing I need to do is get connected to the search service application. So this first line of code gets me the proxy for the search service application. And so you can see I have this object proxy, which is the search service application. And then I'm going to use the keyword query class. And the keyword query class allows me to specify things like what type of results I want, in this case, the relevant results. Do I want to enable stemming? Stemming is the idea that says, if I have a word that's similar to the word you're searching for, should I expand my search? Probably not, since we're looking for people, so I'll say false. Should I trim any duplicate results? Yes, you should. And then the query text, which is the actual keyword query that you want to run. There it is. So I also just want to point out to you while we're here that the keyword query class has a ranking model ID property. So now we can combine these things. So if you had a custom ranking model that maybe pushed people with certain skill sets to the top of the results, then you could sort your results that way or help sort your results that way, maybe by office or something. I don't know. Whatever it is, it makes sense. But I just want to point out to you that you can programmatically run these queries and combine that with a custom ranking model to affect the results. Once we get our keyword query set up, then we can simply run execute against that, and that's going to return the results to me in this result table collection. I get the result table out here, as you can see, and then all I'm doing is binding those results to a grid and displaying them. That is some pretty simple stuff. Very easy to do, and yet very powerful, can help solve a lot of problems. Again, if we don't like the keyword query syntax, if we need more horsepower than that, then we can do a SQL full text version of this same type of web part. So I've got another web part in this same project here, which is the recent documents web part. Again, this is just a web part. nothing special, nothing you haven't done before. But in this case, my query string is the query string I showed you in the slide. Select URL, title, and author from scope. Basically tell me all the documents that were added to the portal in the last 7 days. Using a full text query like this is done very similarly to the keyword query syntax, but this time I'm using a full text SQL query class. Again, I can set the results provider, the results type, enable stemming, trimming duplicates. All those things are there for me, including the ranking model ID. And I have a query text property that I set, but in this case, the query text is a SQL full text query. The results still come back to me as a result table. I can still take the result table, bind it to a grid, and boom, I've got a simple web part that shows new things that were added to the portal in the last week. Okay, so we've seen then that by creating these custom web parts, we can insert ourselves in the query pipeline before the query is run and affect how it's run. We can create keyword query syntax web parts that provide useful information. We saw the employee directory. Or go to the full power of SQL full text, but all of it done inside of web parts and pretty much the same pattern as you saw here. Okay, back to the slides then. The last thing that we want to talk about is we want to talk a little bit about .NET assembly connectors. So I showed you early in the lecture here that the .NET assembly connector is now the way that we allow the indexing engine access to an external system. So it's what opens the door to the external system. The I filter is what allows the crawler to crawl, say, the insides of a document body. But it is the .NET assembly connector that exposes an external system for crawling. And so we may be in a position in our search-based solutions that we need to create a custom connector that allows us to crawl an external system. We're also entering into the realm of what's called business connectivity services. So the .NET assembly connector, even though it's a critical part of search, is also considered to be a member of business connectivity services, BCS. So these two things really work hand in hand to allow access to external systems. When we think about business connectivity services, people say, well, business connectivity services allows you to take data from an external system and use it in interesting ways in SharePoint. And those interesting ways can be like making a metadata column out of data from an external system. It can be enhancing the user profile with information from PeopleSoft, all these things. But I just want to draw this connection specifically between BCS and search, because you may have heard, that business connectivity services allows you to search external systems, but you may not be aware that that is not only allowing you to search the external system, but it's the way search actually works. So there's this piece of BCS that is actually the way the search engine works now. So it's more than just some interesting passing fad. It's actually used by SharePoint Search to search everything, .NET assembly connectors. And we can create those. So I'll be doing, just to do a little advertisement, I'll be doing a full session on business connectivity services. We're looking at a very particular solution. I think I've got that tomorrow. So if you're interested in more on that, come to that session. But I'm going to just give you a brief look at what I mean with this searching. And so the solution that I'm going to show you is a solution that searches an external document management system. So here's a not uncommon scenario. An organization that has an existing document management system. And so somebody comes along and says, well, you know, we've got SharePoint, so SharePoint does document management. And you say, well, you know, we've invested hundreds of thousands in this document management system. We're not just simply going to take all of the documents out of our document management system and upload them into SharePoint, right? I've run into organizations that said that. We like what SharePoint does. We're going to use SharePoint for certain things, but there's no way we're unloading the million documents that we have in our document management system and putting it up there. So then the idea becomes, well, okay, what if we could make it look like the documents were actually in SharePoint, present a user interface to someone that allows you to see the documents, and in fact even be able to search those documents from within SharePoint. And so the solution that I have does exactly that. And what you're going to see is a solution here that presents documents to you. But again, these documents are in this external document management system for this particular demo. And in fact, what we'll do is let's go ahead and open that guy up so we can get a little more oriented. So for this particular demonstration, what I did was I created my own external document management system. And this external document management system uses a SQL CE, a SQL Compact Edition database. And you can see here that I have a table inside of it called Documents. And if I say I want to show the table data, you'll see that I have lots of documents in here. There's various metadata. And there's also a column called Contents, which is a blob binary data field that actually has the document in it. So this is an external document management system that uses blobs to store the documents. Each of the documents has an ID, like 13, 14, 15. But the items in this table could be not only a document, they could also be a folder. So you can see, for example, that item 33 is an invoices, which is designated as a folder, and its blob field is null, because folders don't have blobs. And so this single table defines the hierarchy of documents and folders within my custom document management system, because you have a parent ID that points to the folder in which the document is located. So I built this entire thing just so I could have an external document management system to work against. And if we look at the results of this, here is the result. This is a custom web part that goes against the data in that document management system. And you can see I can drill into the invoices table here. I also have paging, so I can go to page 2. And if I come to this document and click on it, you can see that I can open the document, download, save, open. And so it pretty much does all the things that you would expect to have happen in a library inside of SharePoint. Feels like I'm in SharePoint, but my documents are all in an external system. More importantly for this particular discussion is that I can search them. So if I come to search now, I have a tab that I built for external documents where I can do this searching. And I can come in here and I can say, well, let's search for the word text and do a search. And it runs off and does a search, you know, pretty much like we would expect it to. Take a second, I guess. This is always the point where I have to remind the audience that I'm running an entire enterprise on a laptop. So no fair taking any performance impressions away from what it takes to run these. But still, we did pretty good. Here are my results. So the thing that I want to impress you with is that if you look at the results here, you can see, for example, that I got back document 1. And it says over here, this is text document 1. So I want to pause for a second and let that sink in. I have these documents in a blob, in a database. And my search results are returning results from the text that's inside the document. Well, that's exactly what we expect when we run search. But my point is, we can do that. So it's not some kind of watered down version of looking for documents. This is the real thing, because .NET Assembly connectors are part of the search infrastructure. So when I write my own .NET assembly connector, I can search anything I want, and the search results come back in the same way that they do for anything else, even though these documents are not part of SharePoint. And I can operate on them directly. So here I am clicking this document, and look at that, it wants to open it. But where's it opening it from? The external system. See that? So this is the kind of solution that's very powerful, because it's allowing us to keep that document management system that we spent all that money on in place, but we're still providing the same integration and experience to the end user that they expect when they're using SharePoint. I mean, to me, the simplest way to kill SharePoint adoption is to make it something other than the only place you have to go. Right? How many organizations do you go to where they say, oh, I don't know, now we've got this thing called SharePoint, so I could open that, but we also have an intranet, and then I have a document management system client. I don't know, it's just too many things, right? We want people to use SharePoint and only use SharePoint. All right, so having showed you the solution and why I think you should care about it, let's talk just a little bit about creating that .NET assembly connector. So I could probably do a day's worth of training on creating .NET assembly connectors. The folks that were in my BCS class this week, we got a little bit deeper, but still not as deep as you could get. And again, I promise to do more in my sessions tomorrow. But to get you started, .NET assembly connectors are created inside of Visual Studio. The project to create is called the Business Data Connectivity Model. I always say I don't know why they didn't call it the .NET Assembly Connector, but that's the .NET Assembly Connector project, Business Data Connectivity Model. And there is a special set of tooling associated with this when you start the project. And what the tooling allows you to do is to create what we call an external content type, an ECT, an external content type. An external content type is like a regular content type. We know what those are, right? A document content type or a calendar task item content type. But what it does is it represents the fields from the external system, in this case, our external document management system, and the operations that you want to perform on that external document management system. So when I build this project in Visual Studio, I'm saying, what fields do I want back, and what is it that the end user can do? As I create this external content type, Visual Studio creates for me what we call the service class. And in the service class, it stubs out the various operations for me. So in fact, I'm going to scroll down to one that we should look at here. Let's look at this one, the read contents. So I have defined an operation for my ECT called read contents, and read contents takes as an argument the ID of the document in the document management system that you want to see, and it returns a stream. So this is the function that gets called when you want to download a document. So that's why when I click on the document in the search results, I'm able to download it, because it invokes this operation, which calls the external system and causes the document to download. When we do the search, we also get stubbed out operations. And so my basic search operation is this one called read all items. Read all items is called by the search crawler. So when I do a full crawl, this method gets called, and you can see that what this method does is it runs a link query against the documents in the database, and it returns them as a generic collection of documents. And when I do that, the indexer builds an index off of that information that comes back. So using .NET Assembly connectors, you can index any system that you can talk to with the .NET framework, whether it's your own custom document management system or something else. It doesn't matter. So this is how I'm able to actually do the crawl and build up an index based on that. Now, a .NET assembly connector is a combination of both code that implements the operation and an XML file that provides the definition. So over here, we can see the definition of our ECT in our little tooling right here. But if I come over to this file that has a BDCM extension, and instead of opening it with the tooling, I open it up in the text editor, you'll see that the .NET assembly connector has this large XML file, and this XML file defines the various methods. So, for example, I said the read all items operation was called by the crawler. So the short path to understanding is to recognize that my code implements this method of how to look at all the items for the purpose of crawling. This XML model tells SharePoint about my code. So it's the glue that glues my code to SharePoint. So when the crawler runs, it looks at my model and goes, oh, I should call that method. Now, how does it know how to call that method? Within the model itself, if we scroll down here, we'll see a very special property called root finder. And the root finder is in the XML definition, tagged to my implementation of that code, and that is the property that the crawler sees, and it says, I'm supposed to index that content. The other important property is up here near the top of the model, and it's called show in search UI. And the show in search UI property allows this model to appear as a content source in the search service application. So now what will happen is my external document management system appears as a content source in search. I can pick it and say crawl it, and when it does crawl it, it calls whatever the root finder said to call. Along with that, I have a lot of control over how things are displayed in the search results. So for example, remember how when the search results came back, I clicked on the document and it opened the document, but it opened it from the external system, not from anything that was in SharePoint. How did that happen? Well, it happened because in my model, I used this property called display URI field, and I pointed it at one of the properties that I have in code, and that property always contains the URL that actually points to the external system. Now, this is a very quick run-through of the types of things that you can do with the .NET Assembly Connector, but what I want you to take away from it is, if I write a .NET Assembly Connector, I can wrap any system that's outside of SharePoint. I can write a function that says how to call it and build an index. I can tell SharePoint about that index, and then I can, about that function to call. And I can also specify things like what the URL is that appears in search results so that when you click the URL, you actually invoke the external system. And now you're able to create complete search solutions where people are using these external systems, but they're using them with their SharePoint skills and they feel like they're in SharePoint even though the thing that we have is just there in place. Okay. So wrapping it up, let's see where we are. We're in good shape. So these are just some of the properties here that we can use. I discussed a couple of them here just to help you see what the possibilities are. There's also the idea of trimming the search results. So when you write .NET assembly connectors, you can trim results either at crawl time or query time. The takeaway from that discussion is just simply that when you crawl that external document management system, I should not see in the search results any documents that I'm not actually allowed to open, right? So I should have a trimmed set of results. .NET Assembly connectors fully support search trimming, so that would be part of what you write as well. All right, we did some of that. So to wrap it up then, the whole point of the session here is to get you thinking about how you can use search in your solutions to go beyond simply just showing a bunch of links in a page and create targeted search-based solutions. We looked at several different solutions that use custom ranking models, also web parts that we could create to get into the pipeline before the query or after the query using keyword query syntax or full text query. And then I just took a very short look at .NET Assembly connectors and really just hoping to tease you with that so you'll come to my session tomorrow. That would be fun. And then also to do some work on your own to begin to understand business connectivity services more and how you can use it in search-based solutions. I think I'm at the end of my time. I certainly stay here for any questions that you have additionally. Otherwise, thank you for coming and enjoy the conference.